Right, hello everybody.
Hello.
Hello. Right, what a great time. 12:30, yeah? A good slot. You've all woken up and you're not ready to go back to sleep again yet. Okay. Nobody sleeps during my things. I'm Stephen Blake. I run a company called Respondability, which is the ability to respond in the way that you want to life. Normally we're overtaken by thoughts and feelings, and we just accept that they control us instead of us controlling them. So today's talk is about a whole new concept in the way that we think and deal with our thoughts, and it's called brain bargaining. And this came to me about a year and a half ago. I was already doing the concept, but I hadn't thought of a name for it. And I helped somebody who was going through a severe trauma of a claustrophobic attack. And for 4 hours, they had absolutely no control. They were in the chemicals that flood around your body when you've got a phobic attack. I don't know if anybody here has phobias or whatever. But while you're in the grip of that, it's like dying. Your heart races, you are full of thoughts and fears, and in fact at one point this person actually wanted to die rather than continue with the pain in the chest and all the unable to breathe and all the thoughts that were filling their head up. And that carried on for 4 hours until the chemicals sort of eased out the system a bit and logic returned. And I was able to talk directly to their unconscious because I've dealt with it on a regular basis. And in 2 minutes flat, the person went from severe anxiety into a nice, peaceful sleep. And when they woke up, they no longer had claustrophobia. Right? This is the power of the mind. I literally talked to the mind and said, the thing that you've just given this person is far more likely to kill them than going in a confined space. And you think you're keeping them out of confined spaces in case it kills them, and yet you're actually giving them something far worse. So I bargained with it and then sort of gave it an ultimatum and said, look, you don't have an option on this, because your unconscious is only there to look after your safety. And I said, you've got to get rid of this. You've got to break every connection with that claustrophobia. And it did. And 2 minutes later, he was fast asleep. So, how did I actually know all that was going on in this person's head? It was me. Okay? So 18 months ago I had this full-blown claustrophobic attack. Was literally suicidal for 4 hours with it. Sort of praying I wouldn't die and then hoping I would. Because it was just so painful. And it also taught me several other things. One was that we have a stacking system of things that happen. And they keep happening, and we can cope, and we can cope, and we can cope. And that one extra, last one, is the thing that triggers. And this is what happened to me. I'd been at a party, somebody had mentioned being taken off to a jail for 2 days because they wouldn't bribe a police officer in a foreign country who'd made up a speeding charge. And that was the thing I'd always feared. And in the time of that person telling me it, I didn't actually hear it. I wasn't aware of this till the following day when somebody told me. So I had this massive attack triggered off in me. I just went to the toilets and then it just came over me. I wasn't aware that he'd said that. Right? But that was just the final straw. So it didn't really mean much to me while I was listening, but it was the last piece of the puzzle that made me break. Okay. So it taught me about the stacking system. And we've all got the stacking system. And anybody in relationships will know that somebody says something to you one day and you actually just go, and the person goes, what did I say? And they have no idea because it was something quite trivial. And then, it's sort of like there's nothing to be learned from it because whatever they said wasn't the thing that caused that massive problem. So, that was how all this started. So I'm going to cover a lot of concepts today, which is why it's helpful for you to give me your email address, because you want to listen to this over and over again. I'm just writing a book at the moment, and it will be called Brain Bargaining. and I hope that will be on sale early next year. And I think it will go quite major because it is such a simple concept. It's just so simple of just talking to your brain and actually getting to do it. Now, what we don't realise is the brain, or the unconscious part of the brain, doesn't talk to us. Right? There's some people in that room there where it can, where they've trained and they have skills and they can talk to their unconscious and it talks back to them and they'll call it the higher self or whatever. It doesn't matter to me whether it is the higher self or what, it is actually your unconscious it's working through. So it doesn't matter if it's just your unconscious or it's the higher self. And so your beliefs are irrelevant to whether this works or not. Okay. If you talk to your unconscious, it actually tries to get you everything you ask for. So every thought you have, it goes, oh, I'd like to get you that. And it tries to get you it. And the big thing that they should teach at schools that hardly anybody understands is it doesn't understand negatives. It just doesn't understand the, oh, I mustn't, oh, I shouldn't. Oh, I won't. It doesn't understand any of that. It forms part of a sentence, and that word is very difficult for it to comprehend. It's actually going by more than just your words. It's going by your words and your thoughts and your feelings all at the same time, trying to make sense of that sentence. Right? And the best example I've got is chocolate biscuit, and most people who've seen me before would have heard my chocolate biscuit talk. This applies for everything. This isn't just about chocolate biscuits. This is your whole life. Anything you think negative, the unconscious is listening in. And so when you look in the mirror and you say, I'm fat, I'm fat and ugly, it goes, oh, you'd like to be fat and ugly, would you? I'll try and get you it. Right? And it tries to. It tries its best to make you fat. My hair's awful. It tries its best to make your hair look like that again. Right? It just doesn't understand. So, you sat in your chair one day and you think, oh, fancy a chocolate biscuit. And with that, I'd just like you to all think about a chocolate biscuit, unless anybody's allergic to chocolate biscuits. All right? Make it a hobnob or something that's really tasty and crunchy and everything else. So just, I want you to imagine that now in your mouth. All right? Just get that. Get it until you've got that flavour of it and you've got the texture of it. And you can just feel the chocolate melting as you crunch on it. Right? You get all that? And just swallow that a little bit now and just put a bit more in. Okay? So you've all got that taste and that feeling. So the second you sat there, in that instant when you think chocolate biscuit, you've gone into, oh, yummy, really nice chocolate biscuit. Right? But a split second later you go, ah, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, I'm on a diet. Right? Now, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit contains the words, have a chocolate biscuit. Right? If we take the mustn't. And we all know this from, even like setting your clock back. When you set your clock back an hour, you're going, what time is it really? You're doing that. And if you hear a sentence with lots of, I shouldn't, mustn't do that, you go, does that mean I should do that? Or I mustn't do that? Or I'm not supposed to do that? You don't actually, you can't work it out. Because as soon as somebody puts two or three negatives in, you're trying to do the maths on it of, is that positive then? Right? And your brain can't deal with that. So your brain's listened in to you, you've tasted that chocolate biscuit now, you've gone, oh yeah, that'll be nice. But then you're saying to your unconscious, no, I don't want a chocolate biscuit, no, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit. So it's still hearing chocolate biscuit. And as you sit there and you say about 8 times to yourself, I mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, mustn't have a chocolate biscuit, you can feel yourself rising out the chair. And as you're rising out the chair, you're going, this is stupid, I really don't want a chocolate biscuit, as you head towards the kitchen. As you get in the kitchen, as you open the door and you go, I really shouldn't be having this chocolate biscuit, right? You just said have a chocolate biscuit again. And then you open the packet and then you go, I'll just have the one, right? I won't eat the whole packet, right? You have now just said, eat the whole packet. So you start eating the whole packet. And if you don't feel sick before you get to the bottom of them, you'll actually go, well, thank goodness I didn't start the next packet. Okay, and off you go again. So anything you try and react to and say, I'm not going to do this, is the opposite happens. Because all you're doing is thinking about that chocolate biscuit. And even though you're going, no, I don't want it, no, I shouldn't have it, you're still actually tasting that chocolate biscuit and you're wanting it. And your unconscious goes by your feelings as well as what you're saying in the inside. Okay, so it's all mixed up with it. I'd like to go through something I've never discussed before as well, for people that heard me before. We have the past, present and the future. You are here, sat listening to me today. Thank you for turning up, okay? But everything you've ever done in your life has led to you being in this room today. And even on the way here, if you took a left instead of a right, you wouldn't have arrived. Now, lots of people in their life think they should have been somewhere else, okay? I hope nobody's sitting here listening to me going, oh, I wish I was somewhere else. But we have this thing in life. So if something happens to us 20 years ago where we marry the wrong person or we make the wrong job decision or whatever, and we get into that and we go, oh, if only I'd followed my dreams and I'd done this. And we actually, instead of being just here, we're over here in the, I should be over here. I'm going to work from here. Everything I do, I'm going to do from here. Well, you're not. Actually, you're here. Right? And it's a bit like that map that you get in a town centre where it says, you are here. And you can see where the castle is and the cathedral and all that. And you decide to go over to the castle. But if somebody's covered up the you are here and they put it somewhere else, instead of going up and over there, if they put it up there, you're now thinking it's down here. You're always setting off in the wrong direction. Okay? You have to accept now, here in this room, right? If you want to progress in life, you have to accept that you are here now and that everything that's happened in the past has happened, right? You have no chance to change that now because it's happened, it's done, it's dusted. Okay? I don't expect you to like it, and particularly if you've got an illness or a chronic illness or something, or a chronic condition, I don't expect you to like being where you are now, but I want you to accept that you are where you are now. As soon as you accept it, then you can do something about it. But you can't do something about being here and moving on if you think you're over here. It just doesn't work. Because you're living in the wrong mindset. Okay? So, we all have lived in the now. This very small, tight space that's a few seconds long. That's it. That's all we've ever had. From the minute we were born till now, we've lived in the now. And tomorrow has always been the following day, but the following day never actually arrives because you're still back in the now again. You've always lived in the now. We can go one of two ways. We can go into the future. If we go into the future, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen to us other than what we already know, other than things we've already experienced. If you haven't experienced it already, it's very difficult to predict that that's what's going to happen in the future. And so if we've had difficulties in the past and we see something in the future, I'm not going to talk about the happy things we look forward to, like holidays and things, but there's very few things we do look forward to. We tend to live in the moment, and when we look forward, it might be holidays or whatever, but in the main, we point something out that is a difficulty, and then we, in our brain, because we can only be in the now, but in our brain, we now go into the future and we go, oh, that thing's going to be really terrible. You know, I've got that illness, I'm going to get diagnosed then, or what's going to happen, or I won't have the money to pay for that thing in this moment in time. And as soon as we nip there, we actually fetch back the emotion that we've just invented. Because it's not real, is it? Because it hasn't happened yet. So we've invented this thought. We bring it back into the here and now and install that thought. And when we do so, we get the chemicals that come with that thought. Right? Because your body is a fantastic chemical factory. So I'm just going to give you a quick demonstration. I'm just answering the phone now. Okay, so I pick the phone up and I go, right, happy or sad news?
Sad.
Okay. I pick the phone up and I go, happy news, right? So what I want you to do is, come in, please stay seated. What I want you to do is, I want you to think of something happy, and I want you to straighten your shoulders up, put your head up right, and think of something really happy. Okay? And as you're feeling that, just let it intensify and just feel that wonderful feeling. You are now making happy chemicals, right? All sorts of mixture of different chemicals that are going around your body now making you happy. Okay? And as you keep that, I want you to fold in a bit like that, and I want you to lean forward and try and remain happy. Okay, just try it out for yourself. And stay there, and notice that you can't be as happy while you've got your head down, but stay there. I want you to now think of something quite sad, not absolutely sad, right? I don't want any tears. Right? Just think of something sad while you're there. And while you're in that sadness, I want you to now straighten up, get those shoulders back again, and get the head up in the air, and actually try and feel that sadness. Have you noticed it's gone? Okay. Yeah, right, shake that off, because that was a sadness. You can go back to the happy state if you like. Okay, but whatever we do in the brain, we do with the body. When people talk about an illness and it's not all in my mind, it's actually physical and so on, there is very little that is either mind or body. The two just work so well in conjunction with each other. I actually found a way to help people cure themselves of ME, fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. And it came to me, it took 2 weeks of study, and I actually worked it out. And I can help people with those illnesses, providing they understand that it is their own thoughts of being really driven that actually put them into that state in the first place. Right? But the problem is, if you've got an invisible illness, you actually start to self-destruct on the basis that you know you're not lazy, but because nobody can see that you're ill, you feel like you're lazy. Because you're trying to drive yourself to get out of the illness, and actually the more you try and drive yourself out of the illness, the more ill you get. Because it's a safety protective switch that's turned you down. Gives you pain, it gives you fatigue. It tries to keep you in one spot to build up all your resources. But while you continue fighting it, it just gives you more pain and more fatigue. So the unconscious is absolutely brilliant because it gives you whatever you need. Now, it will never deliberately harm you. It will only give you enough pain to stop you from the pain that you're heading towards, right? So a bit like my claustrophobic attack, somehow I was running a program that said, if I get in a confined space, I'll die of asphyxia. That was my program that was running. So it did everything possible to keep me out of a confined space because I was going to die of asphyxia. As soon as I worked out, it wasn't about the confined space, it was about the air, I was able to change it and say, you know, if you go in a toilet cubicle and there's a gap that much below the door and a gap that much above the door, you ain't going to die from asphyxia, right? It's nothing to do with a confined space. But it was willing to give me something that felt like I was dying to keep me out of that confined space. Right? And this is where brain bargaining comes in. If you talk to your brain, you actually get it to agree that the thing that you want to happen is better than the program it's already running. Right? If you don't get it to agree that that thing is better than what it's already running, it won't let go of it. Because whatever age you are now, take off when this first happened, that's how long you've had this thing. If we build up a safety system inside, your unconscious isn't stubborn. It isn't stubborn. I mean, every book you'll read will tell you that you have this stubbornness and it's not going to let go of anything, and it will. Your unconscious will do anything it does that seems to be in your best interest, but it's only running the programs you've already installed. So if you get to a situation where there's no other program other than the one that says, don't go there, keep out of this, it'll run that one. Right? But because it's protected you, it's a bit like if somebody came to see me or a small child with their cuddle, their blanket or the toy that they always carry around. If you say, right, that's hurting you, I'm going to take that off you, you get screaming, don't you? You know, you can't take that safety blanket off a child. And we're the same. We have this safety blanket, and quite often it's called chronic anxiety. So if you spent your whole life thinking something bad's going to happen, looking over your shoulder, something has happened to you at some point in your life that was so horrendous when it happened that whilst you were full of those chemicals, you actually made up a new program and you said, I am never ever going to feel this again. And the moment you said that, your unconscious worked out how to not go there again. Right? And so you become anxious. And the idea of anxiety is, if you're constantly vigilant, you're going to head this thing off at the pass the next time. You're going to see it before it happens. You're going to be prepared and you're going to move out of the way of it. That's what anxiety is. But it's not real. That anxiety you've suffered all your life is not real. It's the response to a one-off thing that happened that quite likely has never happened again in your life. Okay? I deal with people every day. I take them back 30 or 40 years, find out what it is, show them what it is, and then bargain with the brain to say, look, that anxiety and that situation is never going to happen again. They don't need the rest of their life looking over the shoulder, waiting for this terrible thing to happen. You're actually on full alert all the time. You're actually harming yourself with all the chemicals that are flooding your body now. You're in a constant state of stress, which is no good for your immune system, anything else. This is how your brain and body work together. If you're constantly in stress, half of you is shutting down. Because if you're going to be a meal in the next 2 minutes for a saber-toothed tiger, you don't need your stomach to work, you don't need a lot of eyesight. You do need to be able to run at about 100 miles an hour. So it's feeding part of you with adrenaline and everything else to rush, and it's calming the rest of you down. And this is why if we're stressed all the time, we have stomach problems, because it shuts your stomach down, it shuts your eyesight down to a narrow vision, or even you get double vision, you're just looking for somewhere to get out of the way. You shouldn't be in that state all of your life. And the problem I have in getting clients is that if you felt that way all your life, you don't even think there's something you can do about it, that you can go and see somebody. And I help people in one session. The least I've done it in is about 2 hours, and anything up to 5 hours, 20 minutes is my maximum. But I help people and they don't leave the door until they've had a major improvement. And all it is going back, seeing that event for what it is, and then actually seeing it in the reality of, it's not happening again, I don't need to be hypervigilant for the rest of my life. The same method you can do for anything. So, in a few moments, we're going to go there and do this. Okay? Is everybody all right about standing up? Okay? Everybody okay with that? Right. I'd like you to all stand then. I'll do the magic shield in a few minutes. I've forgotten about that. This is my train of thought. Okay. Now, what I'd like you to... I'm just going to talk to your unconsciousness. So just take a few deep breaths and just let things dangle down and let it go. Okay? A few deep breaths. Just let it go. If you want to, you can close your eyes. I'm just going to talk to your unconscious now and just say to it, your unconscious is the most wonderful thing on the planet. And what I'd like you to do is understand that it's run every bit of you for as long as you can remember. Right? It's looking after you in every way, shape and form. And I want to thank it for that. And I want you to thank it for that. Okay? And as you thank your unconscious, I'd like you to go and say to it, right, I think we ought to have a better relationship. And I talk to you all the time, but you don't actually talk to me in words, but you keep giving me things that I'm not quite sure what you're giving me. Right? So if you have repeated dreams or anxiety or whatever, that is a message to get things finished off. So I just want you to thank your unconscious for everything it does and just ask it to give you a yes in any way, shape or form. That usually takes the form of being pulled forward or backwards or to the left or the right. So just put yourself in a balanced state and just ask your unconscious to give you a yes in any way, shape or form. But give it so that you're absolutely, without doubt, this is a yes coming from your unconscious. As soon as you've got that yes, sit down, please. All right. So you're asking your unconscious now to give you a yes. Oh, yeah, somebody nearly fell over there. Okay. Make it so vigorous that you actually have no doubt that it's coming from you. Just close your eyes, sir. Just relax off. Just don't sit down until you've got there. All right. Just make sure you're loose. Okay? And just ask for a yes. As soon as you've got that yes, sit down. Okay. Okay, if you haven't got there yet, come see me on my stand, because the gentleman wants to start. You start at 15:15, don't you, sir? Yeah, okay, thanks. Okay, so take a seat. Anybody who didn't get there, come and see me. Literally in 2 minutes, you're able to do it. So, brain bargaining is about you talking to your unconscious. You already do it with everything you say in your head. And I've done a technique before, which is throwing away negative thoughts and replacing them with positive thoughts. We haven't got time for that today. But the actual part of bargaining is only ever asking for a yes from your unconscious, right? So you say things like, I'd like you to do that, and if you're willing to do that, give me a yes. You're not asking for a no. You don't even show it how to do no's, right? This is the easy bit about it. So the yes that you've got, most of you got today, and the rest will do if you come on my stand, you ask for a yes. And your unconscious is like this wonderful child of yours who absolutely adores you and is a very intelligent child, but it only does what you tell it. And if you don't tell it, it'll run a program it's already got. But it's really out to look after you and give you everything you could possibly want. If there's an old program in there, like anxiety, you need to have it thrown out. Because of the protective shield thing, you actually won't be able to throw it out yourself. Particularly if you've had it 35, 40 years, because it's a bit like having your safety blanket snatched from you. And I'll do the magnetic shield in a moment. It only takes a few moments. So, when you have things going on in your head, first of all, see it as a message to you about something. If it's unclear what it is, just go back into there and say, I know you're trying to tell me something, but can you actually give me it in a better format? I don't understand you. You know, I'm quite happy to listen to you, but please bring it back so I can understand it. And it has to, because it's there to protect you. So it's like the small child has to go out and learn English so it can talk to you. Right? If it comes back then, deal with it. Because anything that's unfinished business carries on in your head until it's got the answer. This is why when we get trapped in the past, if we've, a relationship is the best example of it. If we've actually been in a relationship and they've ended it, we then constantly niggle about, oh, I wonder what happened there. Was it me? Was it them? Was it, you know, another person? Was it? And you do all that. And every time you revisit it and you do that, you still leave it open-ended because you haven't finished with it. And you keep going back there and keep going back there and keep going back there. And you will through the rest of your life until you say, I'm going back there one more time and I'm actually going to deal with it. Okay. And as you deal with it, then your brain's able to put it away. It's like a massive filing cabinet. At home, I'm pretty good. I've got files for everything, but sometimes I get bits of paper and I don't quite know what to do with them. And when I don't know what to do with them, they end up on a pile on the floor. So I'm able to label them in such a way that I can put them on the floor, but then what happens is somebody comes around, I scoop them up, put them in the tray again, and then they go back out. And your brain's no different to that. If it can file it away, it will file it away, but it needs to know where to file it and that the job's done. Unless the job's done, it will keep coming back to you, coming back to you, and coming back to you. And this is when you can deal with it with your unconscious. And sometimes when you think you've dealt with it, you can just say, go away. Right? And it goes away. Happens with physical things. I had a skin tag. Went to see my doctor friend. For 3 days I'd been saying, well, you can go away, you can go away. Showed it to my doctor friend and said, I hope it's not cancerous or anything. And she looked at it and she went like that with a finger and it fell off. So the mind is capable of so much. And I've run out of time for doing the magnetic shield. But if you go onto my website, if you give me your email addresses as well, the website address is on the main brochure. Go on there, look at the talks, and look at my blogs, and there is there the magnetic shield, a video of it. So, right. Got through a lot of ground. Please come see me on my stand if you want any more. And thank you very much. I've been Stephen Blake. You've been awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.